The opinions expressed in this program reflect only those of the participants and are not necessarily those of the sponsors, management, or staff of WTBQ Radio or FST Broadcasting Corporation. WTBQ.
All right. Welcome to Health Matters, because your health does matter. My name is Peter Fallon. I'm the Director of Education at A&T Healthcare. Joining me this morning is my wife, Ann Fellow, who's the Regional Director of Patient Services and the Director of Quality Assurance at A&T Healthcare. And say good morning to our listening audience of WTBQ.
Good morning, everyone. It's great to be here.
And now our guest, we have a very distinguished guest who's been on several times, and every time he gets on, he gets even better. But we have Dr. Michael O'Dowd, who is a doctor of pharmacy, correct?
That's correct.
And there's a lot of work that's done, but we have a lot of interesting topics that we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about MRSA. We're going to talk about how antibiotics develop resistance. Talk a little bit about Legionnaire's disease. And we do want to get a little bit of an update on vaccines, okay? Because now we have the, I know Ann and I did have one on vaccines, but we really thought just because we have Dr. O'Dowd here, we would like him to discuss it a little bit further. A&T Healthcare is a home healthcare agency. We have offices in Newburgh. We have it in Kingston, Mount Kisco, New Jersey, and New York City. Our corporate office is in New City, New York. And as I always say, every Thursday morning, we are honored to have this particular show. Our show, it's not controversial, contentious, or even confrontational, but it is engaging, informative, and I want to say it is entertaining. We want to make sure that you learn something from it, and I can certainly attest to it, because every time we have a show, I learn something from it. So even though you may be an expert in it, there's always something that you can always learn. We do accept any questions or phone calls. The number is 845-651-1110. And again, thank you for making us part of your Thursday morning. Well, we have a couple of things. Let's just finish a couple of things. I know Facebook, the numbers are increasing, and I'm very happy with the increase in the Facebook numbers. join us. We have, as I said, all our programs are archived, so you can listen to it if you do miss it. I know Ann does a little blog on it as far as what the topic that is on. And I know for the last 2 months I've been talking about Dancing with the Stars. I had the big competition for United Hospice of Rockland on Sunday. And I will divert that to my wife, Ann, if she could comment on, although I did give it to Taylor. She had the uncut version of the actual performance for the Rockland, and she greeted me with, "Peter, you were so good. It was flawless." I said, "Gee, I'm sorry you weren't one of the judges." But Ann, why don't you just comment on it?
Oh, no, the judges had wonderful things to say about your dance, and it was a wonderful event. It was exciting. The room was charged. There were five performers. Peter went first with his partner, Julia, who was here a few weeks ago. They did a fantastic job. You nailed it. You did 3 minutes of a salsa.
Yeah, a lot of them, they had like these little intros, like they were doing like a theatric kind of thing, but I jumped right into it. And by the way, the song was feeling all right. That's why every time I hear it, I'm still feeling all right.
And the judges loved the song. They were even clapping along. Absolutely a fantastic evening.
Well, thank you. It was a great cause.
It was.
And
it
I'm
really
smiling
was.
And I'm feeling all right. Okay.
We haven't come down yet from it.
You know, one of the downsides of having the more upsides than downsides of having a radio program, but one of the downsides is that you can't see something. Well, I have this beautiful tie that I wanted to talk to, Michael about, Dr. O'Dowd. if you liked my tie, and would you wear it? Well, unfortunately, he ruined the surprise, because what it is, it's a tie of Mycobacterium tuberculosis, okay?
Yes, I'd wear it, but I'd need 6 months to a year of antibiotic therapy.
At least, right?
We will be talking about that.
Definitely
about
you'll have treatments. A positive PBD.
Yes.
But he looked at it, and I ruined my whole opening. I just kind of, you have some, I'm going to see. But he's so astute, and that's what, he's so knowledgeable, so astute, and he has a great sense of humor.
So did he get it?
Yeah, he said it before we even walked in.
Oh, that's great.
So I said, you told the punchline. Let me tell you a story. I love talking to pharmacists. I was at the RSVP a retired seniors volunteer program. It was a breakfast, and I sat at the table, and I'm very personal. I introduced myself to everyone there. Anyway, I was sitting with the pharmacist, and I don't remember his name. So he asked me one time, are you going back to work after this? You know, it was going to end at like 11 o'clock, you know. Yeah. But I said, well, actually, I am, but I have to go. I'm doing an in-service at one of the senior centers, and I'm going to be talking about medication safety. So he chimed in, and he said, oh, I'm a pharmacist. Oh, well, what do you talk about? So anyway, I just went to the one thing, and I, you know, like Michael is so, you know, amicable, you know, all this other, but anyway, I said, well, one of the things I wanted to make sure is that, you know, people know that when you take medicine, even the, and we did have it on one of our shows, Medication Safety, that if you do take medicine and it's not, has a different name, it may have the same ingredients. So I go, well, you know, if you're taking Tylenol at 8 o'clock, it doesn't mean you can turn around and then take a leave at 11 o'clock. So he goes, that's a poor example. Huh? I mean, he just jumped ugly on me. Like, no, that's not a good idea. If you said Advil and Aleve, that would be a better example of it. So I said, oh boy, this guy, hey, you got to, you know, I'm just doing it. The essence of it was, Michael, is that read the label, okay? So just because it has a right. different name, and, right. that, and that's the perfect thing. So then he was saying, like, what else? And I said, well, a lot of times medicines are sold vis-a-vis television that you hear about. So he goes, that's terrible. That's terrible. And I'm thinking, is he saying that's terrible that I'm saying something that's not correct? But he was really saying that's terrible that it shouldn't be like that. So,
well, as a pharmacist, I never like to advertise our wares because the layperson can't diagnose themselves and then treat. And you don't want a person that's not knowledgeable about the drug to go in and say, listen, I feel this way and I think I need that. So give me that or we're gonna bring the lawyers in. So I think that the advertising on television, while important to let people know about the conditions, I think they should maybe throttle back a little bit on the product presentation.
Yeah, and that's what you – and I was joking when I did the presentation. That sometimes they talk about a medicine, and then the majority of it talks about the side effects. And then when it's over, you say, well, what was that medicine selling anyway or something like that?
Right. And I also stress – sometimes you don't even know what it's for by the end of it. It's like, what was that?
And if the side effects don't scare you enough to not take it.
Right. that should be enough for you to forget about what it was.
I mean, really, I'm going to say, hey, if the side effects are more than – that's my new bar now. If the side effects are longer than 15 seconds, don't – I just shut off. I don't want
to – Don't pay any attention to it.
Well, that's actually a legally mandated statement that they have to make about the side effects. Right. And the side effects are I don't remember the exact verbiage of the law, but a certain percentage of the population is affected by a side effect that has to be mentioned. Mm-hmm. So I don't remember the numbers, but if a very minute section of the population mm-hmm. has a particular side effect, it still has to be mentioned, even though the majority, the vast majority, never but even see it.
Like most people don't have those side effects, but
But I do, and I also stress that whenever you're taking a new medicine, pay attention because you know you may have one of the side effects, but just pay attention to what's happening.
Right. Always notice the changes.
I always love. I'm dating myself, but it always reminds me when they start talking about the side effects. Remember the commercial? I think he's in the Guinness Book of Records. One who used to do the FedEx commercials. He'd be talking on and on about how they were doing it, and I think he was in the Guinness Book of Records of being able to speak the fastest. Well, maybe he is still working, but you don't know it's him because you don't see his face, but that's always something to be concerned about. But let's talk about today's show, okay? As I said, we're so happy to have Dr. O'Dowd here just because he has so much knowledge. And what we're going to be, our topic, we're going to have like several topics today. We're going to be talking about the superbugs, okay? Superbugs, so not to be confused with Superman. But we're talking about different ones like methicillin-resistant Staph aureus, even with the tuberculosis. We'll talk about the resistant strains of tuberculosis, as well as vaccines. And even we want to include Legionnaires' disease. There's an outbreak that happened over in West Point. There was one in the city. And I think over in Westchester County, I think there was one, if I'm not mistaken. Right. So that would be an interesting subject. One of the things that you have to remember, this is a very technical and complex subject. However, because you are listening to Health Matters and your health does matter, we will basically speak in layman's terms. I don't want to, kind of like a microbiology for dummies, but I never like those books when they say for dummies, because it infers that, well, you're a dummy because you're buying it and stuff like that. But we will use it in layman's terms so that you would be able to understand it. And if you have any questions on it, please let us know. First, let me just start at the very beginning. There's never, what do you mean by the beginning? But I, as you know, before I became a registered nurse and way before I was working for A&T Healthcare, I was a microbiologist. And let me just tell what the process is. The process is that the physician, if he suspects that you do have an infection, he or she will order a specimen to be collected. And as Anne knows from her days in nursing, you want to make sure that you are collecting it properly, okay, when it's collected, and that if it has to be sterile, that you use aseptic technique as best as possible. Once the specimen is collected, it's sent down to the microbiology department, and what they do is they plant it out on agar plates. These are like blood agar, McConkie, but they're all different ones, and the McConkie only grows gram-negative bacilli. Again, I'm being very simple.
Now you're being technical.
I'm sorry. Okay, but the idea is you grow it out on the agar. You have to wait 24 hours, and then after 24 hours, you see the organisms. You can pretty much identify, very high likelihood that you can identify it. But then what you want to do is you want to test to see what antibiotics would work with this particular organ. And that would be organism. And this would be 48 hours. So if you have an active infection, okay, a doctor cannot wait 48 hours before they prescribe something. But what they do is they give you something empirically that they say, this looks like a Staph aureus infection, this looks like an E. coli infection, therefore let me put you on this particular antibiotic that actually works well with that particular organism. And that sounds great. It's good.
Well, some people might know about taking that culture when you go to the doctor with a sore throat. Mm-hmm. They will do a quick strep test.
Yeah, that's
very
yes.
popular.
Yeah, group A strep.
So
yes.
and they'll have a quick reading right there, mm-hmm. and then they'll say, well, call back tomorrow because we'll have the final reading. So they do try to spearhead it right in the beginning and get that test done. And I know they do like for UTI, they'll do like a little strip test.
Yeah, no, and that's what's important. Like you want to get something, and even like going back empirically, I always remember. But the Graham stain, Michael, you know about the Graham stain?
Sure.
That was invented by guess who? Dr. Graham back in 1895. What I'm still awestruck by is that is still the best form of getting an instant reading of what it is. They'll just say it's a Gram negative bacilli, or whatever it is. You still have to wait for it to grow out, but that gives them the chance to give something empirically that would treat it. But what has happened now is that the microbes have been a little funny on us, but they've started to become resistant to these strains. So you may be put on an antibiotic that for 2 days, and then when you find out that the antibiotic that you've been on is not effective against that particular strain, then it's like the doctor wastes 2 days, and now he or she has to start something new. So that's what we're going to be talking about. But first, let's start real easy. And one of the is that, what is an antibiotic, Michael?
Well, there's several different types of antibiotics. An antibiotic is something that is, I guess, for the layperson, an anti-infective, something that kills the bacterium in question. Does not work on viruses.
That's a very good point. Yes, okay.
Right. It does, however, prevent what's known as a super infection, or an infection over top of another infection. So if you have a viral infection and your resistances are low as a result of your body trying to mitigate that, you can develop a super bacterial infection. So that's a lot of times why you'll get an antibiotic prescribed prophylactically when you have a virus.
I know, unfortunately, that people feel when they see their doctor that, oh, you know what, we have to, if he or she doesn't give him a prescription for an antibiotic, oh, well, why am I going to the doctors or anything? And I remember the old days, and I know with your, I can't believe how old our daughters are now, and your children
it's even, it's funny you mention that, it's even more insidious than that. If the doctor prescribes simple penicillin and it's only an inexpensive prescription, well, how good can he be? He didn't give me the expensive
right,
stuff.
Right, well, I want the good stuff. I want the new stuff. Yeah, I don't want the exactly. old medication. Though I think penicillin's a little bit more expensive than it
is. No, but I do remember the old days, Ann, and maybe you do. No, I don't think you, but if my daughter was sick, we'd call up the doctor's office and they'd say, okay, well, here, what pharmacy do you have? Okay, well, here, okay, I'll call in a prescription.
Oh, yeah,
now,
that's true.
You bring them in up front and center. Oh, sure. No, you can't. Yeah. They used to do that in the old days. Now that you have to come in and we have to look at it.
Of course, in my day, the doctor came to the house.
Oh, that's really, yes.
And you didn't want him to because he always brought that needle and you had to have shot a penicillin.
No, it's come a long way. And it's always important about, so often we are very dependent on antibiotics because when you have an infection, I always remember this story is that they used to say about survival of the fittest. I heard an infectious disease lecture at Montefiore Medical Center where I'd worked when I was doing infection control. And they said that it's almost like survival of the fittest with the people that are living very old is that when they were young, a lot of people that were exposed to tuberculosis or some other disease, they died, but they were able to survive. However, on or about 1940, is that fair? They developed antibiotics, so now that particular component was gone, that if you did contract an infectious disease, many times the antibiotic would be able to resolve it, and you'd be fine. But now we have the nuances that now these antibiotics that we've always counted on for so long, they're becoming resistant. One of the things that they're saying is that they're saying that they've called organisms that are resistant, it's been called the world's most pressing health problem, okay? And, if you contract something like that, my days of infection control, you can spend it to your family members, your schoolmates. Now we have the little Malcolm, our grandson, and then even your coworkers. Could you talk a little bit, Dr. O'Dowd, about how does a organism develop a resistant strain?
Well, it develops a resistant strain by being exposed constantly to a particular antibiotic, for example. What it does is most times develops an enzyme that will interrupt, in the penicillin family's case, they develop a piperazine ring enzyme that mm-hmm. cleaves it. Mm-hmm. And in order to mitigate that, the scientists have come up with clavulanic acid or mm-hmm. sodium clavulanate, mm-hmm. which is a protective mm-hmm. chemical that will bind to the enzyme so that they don't get to the amoxicillin in the case of augmentin or the piperacillin in the case of zosyn and things like that. So there are ways that we have, with multiple drug therapies and also with this clavulanic acid is really been a boon to us to use old drugs for new mutated.
Right. Because they haven't met those
right.
drugs yet.
Well, exactly. They haven't seen. And there are bugs out there that are starting to figure that out, too. Yeah. But it's, it's all genetics. It's, it's evolution.
And I know, even you were joking. Sometimes when you're with professors, you get the joke. But I am wearing a tie which shows what mycobacterium tuberculosis looks like under the microscope. And you said about 6 or 1 year. And that's one of the daunting problems with tuberculosis is that if you were diagnosed with, pulmonary tuberculosis, the cocktails that are, it would be like from 6 months to a year
right.
of like five particular meds.
Right,
you know,
correct.
I know a couple, rifampin, I can't go through all the ones that
INH.
I
have.
Right, right. So INA, isoniazid, thambutol, several others. There are also...
And some B6.
B6, right, right. Pyridoxine. Yeah. So, and that is to help enhance the action of the other drugs by making them more...
And that's one of the things that's so important is that, you have to... does this contribute, Dr. O'Dowd, as far as developing the resistance strains, is that, sometimes when people... Let's use the tuberculosis, because that's an extreme example. You'd have to be taking... And it's a handful of pills. They're not like one pill. It's like four or five or six. And you have to take it from anywhere from 6 months to a year. But after 2 months, or even, let's say 3 months, you're feeling good. You're feeling all right, like the song goes. And they say, you know what? I'm not going to be doing this for another 6 months. I'm feeling all right and not do it. And does that play into you don't continue taking your antibiotics?
That's the danger zone. That's how you make a bacterium resistant. That's exactly the recipe for creating resistance because the bug has been exposed to the drug for so long, it is expecting it, and now all of a sudden it's not there. So it mutates and develops enzymes so that when you retreat, because you will have to, you'll suppress the bacteria, in this case tuberculosis, you'll suppress it, and then there'll still be a little bit left. And as soon as you stop the medication, it'll bloom like a flower.
You know,
and then it won't necessarily and then it might not,
it
respond. Might,
right, it won't respond to the treatment because it's already figured it out.
Right.
You know, when I was speaking at the senior center list, I was on medication safety, and I used to tell the story about my Aunt Pat. And so she called me up one time and said, "Oh, Peter, do you have any leftover antibiotics?"
Oh, you bring up a good point.
And I said, "Oh, Aunt Pat," I said, I love you dearly, but I don't." But then I said, "Peter, this is an education moment. Don't lose it." So I said, "Aunt Pat, even if I did, I wouldn't give it to you, but you should never do that. You never save your meds. You have to take it for the full duration. Don't think, hey, I'll save it later. I'll put it aside. And when I want to do it, you know, the next time I feel a cold coming on, I'm good to go. I don't have to pay the copay with the meds. I don't have to do this or do that."
So you still?
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, that happens quite often in the retail sector. Someone will feel better after 5 days of a 7-day therapy and stop taking the drug. And sometimes the bug won't bounce back, but they'll have the 2 days left and think to themselves, "I don't feel so good today. I'm going to try this. It worked the last time, and it's a different bug, and now you've delayed yourself 2 days from getting treatment. Now you've really given the bug a chance to get hold, and you're going to be sick." Even if you do have leftovers, even if you missed a dose here and there and you end up with two or three leftover, bring them back to the pharmacy, bring them to your fire training center, wherever you dispose of medications.
Not down the toilet.
Right, not in the watershed, please. But no, dispose of them safely. As soon as you can, it's not something that you should have hanging around because it could be more dangerous for you than not.
Right. I know it's right in. We were looking at our grandson was on an antibiotic, and it was a liquid. It was a liquid antibiotic, and it said after 14 days disposal, because invariably you'd probably have some that was left over, and it probably had a short shelf life. What they were saying is don't.
What about the liquid antibiotics?
Well, hydrolysis is one of the ways that drugs in general are broken down. So when I get the package of powdered antibiotic, it stays powdered for a year or two or three or whatever the shelf life is, expiration date listed by the company. Before I dispense it, I crack it open and add water.
Right.
And that begins the hydrolysis process. So the hydrolysis process, although slow, won't damage the drug until the 14-day. Then it starts to taper off. A few more days, and it's pretty much tapered off. The ingredients that flavor it are congealing. The drug is cleaving and not as much or as active as it was.
Right.
And it just becomes kind of a soupy mess. So after those 14 days, it's really a good idea to get rid of it.
Toss it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Good to know. So what exactly does MRSA mean, or MRSA? People say MRSA all the time. What is that?
Let me give a lead-in for that.
Okay,
first,
all right.
Okay.
Well, that's my question.
I know I've been teasing the Journal News, okay? I've been teasing the Journal News. And Michael, by the way, we have a couple of things we wanted to go over, updates. But after we had Michael on, the next week the Journal News had an article on it. So I walked in last week. And I had the newspaper, and I said, "Well, look at the front page of the Journal News, MRSA." I said, "Ann, that would be a great topic to do. Let's see if we can get Dr. O'Dowd to be on it." So anyway, we did it. But anyway, in today's Journal News, Thursday, October 8th, the headline reads, "League Union Brief Giants on MRSA, East Rutherford, New York. The New York Giants have taken a crash course on MRSA. The team doctor said trainer Ronnie Barnes, the head of the team's facility, that the players used spoke to the team on Wednesday after tight end Daniel Fells was hospitalized with an antibiotic-resistant organism known as MRSA. And I always joke about it. What an opportunity. I was speaking, I could have done that in service, and I would have seized that particular opportunity if I had known about it. And knowing, you know, Tom Babington, he would have really had a nice spread out for them to do it. But I think what we'll do, I don't know, would I talk to Tom Coughlin or Reese, the general manager, that, hey, we did a show on MRSA. If any of your players would like to listen to it, it'll be very informative and stuff like that. And then I was thinking that, you know, maybe they did listen, and then all of a sudden Anna from the front desk would say, Peter, you got a phone call for Eli Manning? I think it's a prank call. And I said, oh, no, it's not. They probably listened to our radio show. You probably just have a question. So you never know. In the world, you never know. But why don't you talk a little bit about MRSA, M-R-S-A?
Okay, well, let's talk about the root of MRSA.
Let's talk about the Giants and what they need to do on defense. Okay, go ahead.
And we're going to withhold
opinions on the Giants. They're a great team. Staphylococcus aureus, that's the bug in question. And MRSA is methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus. So years ago, you would treat Staph aureus with methicillin, and eventually it developed, it mutated and developed an enzyme that attacked that piperazine ring able to break down that penicillin molecule or methicillin molecule and be untreatable. So we've come up with a couple of ways that clavulanic acid mixture with another drug called piperacillin. Mm-hmm. We use that to treat it. We use some other drugs like Bactrim, but mostly it's a combination of drugs that we need to use for quite a long time to get it to resolve. It's difficult to resolve. It's found in the community. There are two types. There's a community-acquired methicillin-resistant MRSA, and there's a healthcare or hospital-acquired strain.
Now, usually that's where, by the way, you're listening to Health Matters. Again, it's Peter Fella from A&T Healthcare, and I have my wife Ann Fella here. And we're talking about superbugs. We're here with Dr. O'Dowd, who's a doctor of pharmacy. And we're just talking about, right now we're talking about MRSA, but we're talking about like the superbugs, about how organisms develop resistance. If you do have any questions you'd like to call us, you know, the number is 845-651-1110. I always leave out one of the ones when I'm doing it, but I didn't forget that time. But go ahead, continue now about the MRSA and about, you know, it's in the hospital, and it's interesting. It's interesting that when you have MRSA, you may be hospitalized, but that's really one of the places where you see it so often.
Well, that's true. I mean, basically, it's transmitted by touch, by surface, as well as by human contact. The most distressing part is that it is transmitted by surface. So you can touch a surface that someone else has touched, I guess in the case of a football player, a football or a helmet or a uniform, and contract it that way. And
I know there was another thing in the journal where they said a gentleman died from MRSA. He was using a hot tub, and I guess they didn't clean it good or they didn't have a good chlorine level. But anyway, he went in and came out and had all these MRSA all throughout his body. He wound up dying from sepsis, which is when you have a methicillin-resistant Staph aureus infection, it becomes so severe that it winds up going into your bloodstream, and then it's called sepsis, which really can be like truly a life-threatening situation that you really need something seriously to be done.
Sure. Sepsis is a difficult thing to treat because you're not only treating the infection, you're treating fevers, you're treating coagulopathies, which means coagulation in the blood that doesn't work right anymore because of different enzymes that are interrupted. You're treating respiratory support. There are several things that you have to support, and that's why you need hospitalization. You can't do it at home.
It's interesting because bacteria is out there everywhere. Everything has some kind of bacteria on it. People
There's
get strep
bad.
Throat. People get, you know, staph infection, which is usually, is it more skin?
Well, the community-acquired MRSA is topical. It's usually what seems like a superficial rash, and is treated by, we can treat that topically with ointments.
Is it like a spider bite? Does it resemble like a spider bite? I thought I read that somewhere.
There are certain spiders that cause the same rash, but... Yeah. You know, it's difficult without a culture, without a physician looking at it to figure it out.
Right.
But when you have a wound, either a surgical wound that's been sewn up and not healed yet,
right.
or some kind of a wound, that's when you get into trouble, because that's when it becomes bloodborne. That's when it gets into the right. tissues. And
right. Or when you're hospitalized and you maybe you have a catheter in place or
right.
an IV tubing in place. That now is a possible introduction of additional bacteria.
Sure. Any time you enter the body with a device, a trach mm-hmm. tube or anything, then
it makes you more susceptible.
Absolutely.
To things.
And, and that's those are all like the particular risk factors that happen. And I know that so often with the treatment, we always stress that the treatment should start as quickly as possible. But there's somebody, Anna, I wonder if you could discuss this is there some way that we can prevent antibiotic resistant.
Yeah, we could discuss
infection.
That. I did want to mention though, like, how long has MRSA been around?
Oh, gee, I don't remember what
it
was
exactly. New. It's not like
it's newer
new,
than
it's
newer than TB for sure.
Newer than TB. That's true.
I don't remember exactly right. where it was defined, but
so maybe I don't know
20 years.
20,
maybe?
I would say.
About that, yeah.
But
and it
hits the newspaper now. If someone just had a regular staph infection, we wouldn't know about it. You wouldn't see it in the
right.
newspaper
yeah.
on the headlines
yeah,
or
yeah.
about a football team getting an in-service about
oh man, I,
a regular
I if I had
bacteria.
Known that, I would have been calling up. Right, and I'd be the perfect one to
but,
say.
But the, it makes headlines, things
opinion.
Like MRSA.
Right.
Why
well,
is that? It's
well,
scary?
The word resistance... Invokes fear in just about
right,
any healthcare
right.
professional, never mind the general public. But, drug resistance is, antibiotic resistance is,
right.
is a problem nowadays.
Right.
There have been years of overuse, and anybody that has kids now will especially the younger ones, will, I'm sure, be able to attest that they go to the doctor with a little minor ear infection in their child, and the doctor says, well, just ride it out for a couple of days, and if it gets worse, we'll
right.
readdress it.
Yeah.
And that's his way of saying, I don't want to make it, I want the body to fight it, and hopefully...
See if the body can fight
right.
it.
Yeah. If it can, then we're not going to have another resistance.
Yeah. And they always say, do you have a fever?
Cause right, oh, sure, sure.
The fever is what really, a lot of times, will make the decision
that's
about the treatment.
Also, we have to remember that it's spread vis-a-vis direct contact. It's not an airborne disease where you're going to cough and the droplets come on you. It's just that it really is, it's from contact. And you did say about being on the surface and things like
right.
that, and... but that's really how it's a direct contact from person to person.
Right. Now, that contrasts that with Legionnaire's disease, which is airborne.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it
right.
how
well,
it
we're going to get to that. And what,
right,
you say, what are some ways that we can...
Well, some ways that you certainly can protect yourself. I always, first things first, wash your hands.
Oh, yeah.
When I go to the gym, when I'm finished... I go to the bathroom at the gym and wash my hands.
Right. Well, if you go into any restaurant, you always see the sign, employees
must wash
their hands. Well, you know, that's good advice for everybody.
It's good advice for everybody. Absolutely.
I was going to say, what happens if you don't work here?
Because,
you get a pass?
If you've touched, right. if it's on a surface, you've touched the surface, you touch your eye, you touch
right.
your nose, you touch an old, maybe you have a little open area on your skin that you're scratching. Wash your hands, and you wash your hands for, I'm not sure anymore. How long do you wash your hands?
15 to 20, two verses of Happy Birthday.
Happy birthday.
But
right,
it's
right,
like 15 right. to 20 seconds. And not that you're scrubbing it hard.
You don't want to scrub your skin off.
You're going to get a
but
dermatitis.
But you want to get all the surfaces between the fingers.
Between
and
the fingers,
nails.
Under the nails.
Don't have long
right.
nails. Be careful with your long nails.
You know, give your hands a good wash and dry. And that's something that we teach the children all the time.
Right.
And, of course, whenever there isn't soap and water available, right. hand sanitizer.
Yes, yes.
And another point you make is that hand to mouth. I don't know if there's smokers in this world anymore, but if there are, and I'm sure few and far between, that is a recipe for introducing bacteria
sure.
when you're grabbing the cigarette or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And the same goes true for is true for food and,
right.
and
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
things
right,
that
right.
the lollipops,
right.
whatever.
Yeah.
So,
right.
so that's it's important to wash
so
your hands.
So washing your hands is paramount with any sort of surface contact or any bacteria, we'll say, or viral. So other things you could do is talk to your healthcare provider. If you have concerns, you want to find out about what is an antibiotic resistance, whether or not an antibiotic is beneficial to the illness that you have. don't take antibiotics for viral infections like colds or flu. That's not usually going to help. And you want to take less antibiotic if you can. Do not save your antibiotics for the next time. So if you have those antibiotics and now you have the flu, you really don't want to take those antibiotics for the flu.
It's not going to work. Or cold. And you shouldn't be saving your meds. Yes.
And always take your antibiotic as the doctor tells you to take it. If it's for 5 days, 7 days, 14 days, if it's twice a day, whatever. Of course, if you miss a dose, of course, you can take it usually when you remember or when the next dose is due, depending on how close they are. And always take, don't give your medication to someone else.
Yes. Yeah. Whether it's a relative, a spouse, whatever.
Can we talk a little bit about that, Mike, about if I forget to take a dose of antibiotic, what should I do? Say it's only once a day. A lot of them are once a day.
If it's once a day and you usually take it in the morning, if you remember by dinner, you're probably safe taking it. Right. It depends on the medication. But
some of them are four times a day.
Right. Some that, in that case, if you're within, let's say, four times a day, dividing 6 hours, if you're within 2 hours of the next dose, just wait for the next dose.
Wait for the next dose.
Okay. You listen to Health Matters. My name is Peter Fella from A&T Healthcare. I'm here with my wife, Ann Fella, and Dr. O'Dowd is our Dr. Pharmacy is our guest, and we're talking about resistant strains. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about Legionnaire's disease. There's an outbreak over in West Point, so we're going to cover that when we come back.
A&T Healthcare is a full-service home healthcare agency that works closely with your hospital discharge planner and other referral sources to ensure that all of you or your loved one's home healthcare needs are met. They provide short or long-term hourly or live-in home healthcare aides, LPNs, and highly trained and qualified nurses and therapists as needed. A&T Healthcare has earned a reputation for dependability, responsiveness, and personalized attention. By working in conjunction with nursing departments, HMOs, managed care insurance companies, and other referral sources, they act as facilitators in planning and anticipating patients' needs at home. A&T Healthcare hires the most qualified pediatric, high-tech RNs and LPNs. They provide care with the utmost compassion and sensitivity. A&T Healthcare are committed to providing their pediatric and adult patients with the highest standards of nursing care. By providing high-caliber, reliable nurses and high-quality service, A&T Healthcare consistently delivers more value for each dollar spent. Call 845-638-4342 or visit at-healthcare.com.
Hola, this is Elon Gonzalez, host of El Sabor. Tune in Sunday at 8 p.m., los domingos a las 8 de la noche para música latina, playing pop and traditional Latin music on WTBQ, donde escuchan la mejor música, playing the best music.
Are you an RN or an LPN, caregiver or aide, and want to be part of a first-class, full-service home healthcare agency? Then call A&T Healthcare at 845-638-4342. High standards of care from pediatric to adult patients need your TLC. You are dependable, compassionate, honest and sensitive to the needs of others. Whether you are highly skilled or wanting to learn, A&T has the finest training program in the tri-state area. And if you'd like to be part of the number one home healthcare agency that makes a difference every day in so many lives, then call A&T Healthcare at 845-638-4342 today or visit at-healthcare.com.
This little piggy banker ruined the markets. This little piggy banker foreclosed on homes. This little piggy banker had roast beef Wellington. This little piggy banker had none. This little piggy banker went wee, wee, wee all the way home in the Hamptons. Tune in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. because that's where the money is.
WTBQ weather.
Well, we're looking at mostly sunny skies today. The highs in the mid-60s, so it'll be a little cooler than it was yesterday. Tonight, partly cloudy, heading down to 50. Tomorrow, clouding up. There will be a couple of rain showers moving in during the afternoon. It'll be warmer, though, into the mid-70s. Clouds with a few showers early tomorrow night, then remaining cloudy overnight in the upper 40s. And mostly sunny for the weekend with temperatures in the 60s. From the WTBQ Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Tony Sulimo.
WTBQ.
Right. Welcome back to Health Matters. My name is Peter Fellum, the Director of Education at A&T Healthcare. Joining me is my wife, Ann Fella. And we have Dr. O'Dowd, who's here. We're having a great show. And I'm feeling all right. I know when I did the Dancing with the Stars, they said, whose idea was for that song? It was mine. It was my idea.
No, oh, they knew it was your idea.
They knew it was me. They knew it was me. But I'm... this is going to be like our theme intro. We really just like it. Like feeling all right, not feeling so good myself. But we hope you are all feeling all right, because I know I am, and I'm really enjoying the show very much. When we left, we wanted to talk to Dr. O'Dowd about Legionnaire's disease. Well, let me just start that. Where did they get the name Legionnaire's disease? And I was a young, budding microbiologist at the time, back in 1976, I believe it was. Budding, I use that term, I'm still a budding radio personality,
yes.
But back then I was a budding microbiologist. Anyway, there was a American Legion convention in Philadelphia, 1976, and all of a sudden, all the American Legion, there was like it was what you'd call a cluster, where all of them came down with this particular disease that they'd never seen before, or they it had never been identified, and once they had established that they all where the source was, and what they had, they then coined the term Legionnaire's disease. And I know one of the things that as a microbiologist doing infection control, I should say, is that if there ever is an outbreak, which there was, one of your responsibilities is you have to find out what was the source. How did someone get that? How did someone become infected? And that was one of the things that we would call, if let's say five patients on a floor may have like MRSA, well, what was the index case? Is it the same one? And then they can determine it. But go ahead, Michael, why don't you talk a little bit about Legionnaire's disease? There's an outbreak in New York City. It was getting a lot of attention about it. You are reading about it. But what exactly is it? Tell us about that. I told you where they got the name, so you just tell us what that is.
Okay. Well, Legionnaire's disease is something that grows in warm water. So you find it in air conditioning systems and in large buildings and cooling towers and the warm water that runs off the I don't know much about the HVAC end of it, but that's what I've been told.
Even physical therapy equipment, I guess what you just said, that could work with physical therapy equipment, you know, as far as like warm water and stuff.
Sure, sure. Any kind of...
And if you're doing physical, I'm going in for my knee replacement, like usually you have an open scar. No, you'd have a scar or something that would be healing, so...
You're not getting any yeah.
We'll any apply dry drops. Heat.
It'll be you're dry. Just getting, use the dry heat, okay.
It'll be dry heat and
getting
anybody...
hot packs, you're not getting...
Even someone named Mr. S.A. won't be allowed in their house. At any rate, what we spoke of before was people hanging on to their antibiotics and using them for their next infection. Well, that's exactly what happened here. It presented as a pneumonia. The clinical findings that the doctors came up with was pneumonia, and they used their standard practice, their golden rule of treating pneumonia, and it was the wrong drug. So people were dying, and they were wondering what can we do? And then finally, as a last ditch effort, they tried something as simple as erythromycin, and it was the key, and it resolves cases in days rather than months, and we stopped losing lives. It was just an amazing, but again, you need lab work, you need a culture, you need a way to define what you have. That's why you never treat yourself, and you never get that old doctor calling you on the or you calling the doctor and he prescribing you a prescription.
Right, I remember that was always the thing when you used to do environmental cultures, is that they. Early days, again, I've been in the field very long, but they used to do environmental culture where they just, culture, let's say the desk or something like that, and then they grow, and then it's meaningless, okay? Unless the only time you do that, if there was an outbreak, if someone contracted, if let's say, someone, all of a sudden all these people became sick, then you would start culturing, the cutting machine, you try to see what foods remain, that's part of the investigative process on it, is that you're trying to determine where it was, but they do know it is like really where there's warm water, like the cooling towers, and that's exactly where it was in Philadelphia that time, it was from the cooling factors. But you also have to remember that people that are exposed to it, they don't necessarily have it, but I was doing some research and they were talking about risk factors. Not everyone exposed to Legionnaire bacteria becomes sick. However, they're saying you're more likely to develop the infection if you smoke. Okay, smoking is always bad. Okay, we've always said that on Health Matters is never good. Have a weakened immune system. Have a chronic lung disease. We know what chronic, like emphysema or diabetes, kidney disease. We always talked about a chronic disease. It's one that is a long-term disease that you have. For an extended period of time, you can control it, but you can't cure it. And then the last one, and I do fit this category, are 50 years or older. 50 years of age or older. Those are the particular risk factors that would happen. But if you do contract it, there can be a lot of complications. But that's really where it happens and what goes on. And I think really with all the things that are happening, I believe they're going to start having a little more stricter regulations that if you do have particularly that there's a routine check to make sure that there's something like that isn't festering. And how is that transmitted?
That's droplet. That's airborne. Something that the warm water being sprayed through the HVAC system.
Right.
And lately, I've heard, I don't know how true it is, but there's been certain filtrations and certain ways to mitigate it, because you almost invariably will find Legionnaire's disease to some extent pretty much everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's something that occurs in nature. It's out there.
Yeah.
And when it becomes, when it blooms, when it becomes a big problem, and it gets into the rooms of a hotel room or mm-hmm. the classrooms of a school, then it becomes an issue. Then the people at risk, like you mentioned earlier, can contract it.
But just to make mention, it's not from person to person.
No, it's not.
Yes.
Right. If I have it, I can't give it to another person, but it's coming from the air.
That's right.
So that's something that we have to remember too, is that it's not spread. So if you hear of an outbreak they had something in the city, it might have been a school system, that several people became ill, it's not because they infected each other, it's because it was in that building, in that water tower, that cooling
system. The building
system
was spread that way.
And
not the person.
So that's something that we need to remember about that part of it. It is a severe form of pneumonia, and it is an inflammation caused by an infection. So, and it is very treatable.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But the unfortunate part of it is it looks like other illnesses like pneumonia or flu.
And
it's treated in with those traditional treatments as opposed to
precisely
that one simple erythromycin, which we all are very probably familiar with that name of
an
erythromycin.
You need the brand new expensive drugs, as you would say. That's another new thing. I want the new designer drug. And I always say that to about, like, just because you see it on TV and it's new does not mean that it is better. It's a new one, approved by the FDA, but it doesn't mean it's better. I don't know what this is. Really, we had so much. We're almost out of time.
We're getting.
And we didn't have really any commercials, and we were doing good. We weren't skipping a beat.
I think
Frank asked me, did I want to have another commercial? I said, no, we got too much to cover, Frank. One commercial is fine. Michael, may we talk a little bit about vaccines? I know Ann and I did have a program on it, but I thought, you could tell us something about the importance. Well, let me ask you this question. I'm sorry, I'm going to digress. When I was talking to that friendly pharmacist at my table yesterday, he was talking about now pharmacists are giving injections, and he said, was there any resistance from the pharmaceutical, the pharmacist about giving injections, or how was that embraced?
Well, I can only speak to the way I feel about it.
Okay.
And
I'm
an immunizer, I'll say that. It is controversial. Not a lot of health professionals appreciate pharmacists taking their business away.
Susan Santos, right? Right.
One of our nurses.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
But that's okay.
But we have done studies in New York State since they have started allowing pharmacists to immunize. We've done studies that not only have we been able to immunize a large portion of the population and prevent a lot of disease, we've also increased awareness and therefore business for those others who have traditionally given the injections.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it actually worked in the favor of people that were traditionally physicians and nurse practitioners that were giving the
I was very boastful when we did the program. I said, I got mine, but I was actually by default, I was seeing my doctor about another issue, and all of a sudden the nurse comes in, hi, would you like to have the flu vaccine? I said, yeah, I'd love to, and then I had it, and
I actually did go to a pharmacist.
Yes,
and
yes.
Had my vaccine this year.
But I always say that.
They were busy, I'll tell you. There were three people ahead of me, and there were people waiting. So because it's convenient, you don't have to make an appointment.
Yes, that's right.
You know, if you're willing to wait.
Oh, I don't have time. I'm too busy. I can't see the doctor and all this. And You just get it.
Remember
right
to wash your hands in between patients.
That's all, absolutely.
Yeah. Make sure that the room. Yes, I think, well, if I'm not mistaken, did Susan have a problem?
No, with I'm not going there.
Infection control or something.
Healthcare professionals are at greatest risk for infection because they constantly come in contact with sick patients.
Yes. Right.
So any health professional that doesn't know to keep things clean and clean between patients is putting
shame on them.
They're putting themselves and their patients at risk.
And even themselves. And I always say that is that, you know, you don't also, you don't want you, so often you teach infection control that you don't want to get what the patient is infected with. But by the same token, it's a two-way street. You don't want to infect the patient if you have something. So those are all things that are played into it. Tell us a little bit about the vaccine. We're going to play that little game with you. We're going to just...
We're talking about the flu vaccine.
The flu vaccine, okay. Explain what the importance of having that... We did it, but let's hear it directly coming from a pharmacist. A lot of times there's a lot more credibility, but go ahead. What's the importance of having a flu vaccine?
Well, the best way to prevent the flu vaccine is to be... The best way to prevent the flu is to be vaccinated against it. So what you want to do is build up antibodies. You want to build up an immunity to it so that your body will recognize it and not overreact. Mm-hmm. Because when your body overreacts, it's when it generates all the fluids and the white blood cells and the things that cause you to feel sick, feverish, etc. Mm-hmm. So best way to prevent it is to vaccinate against it. Anyone from the age of 6 months on should be vaccinated. There are different vaccines for different indications. There's also a couple of reasons not to vaccinate, one of which is if you're allergic to eggs, you shouldn't be vaccinated. Injectably vaccinated.
Let's have a little fun game because Michael's always good. And why don't you quiz, if you can answer these questions, true or false, and give you a reason why you said such as. Go ahead. Five quick questions.
I always get the flu when I get the vaccine.
Is that true or false?
No, that's false.
Okay, go ahead.
You don't get the
flu. Very good. One right. Let's
what,
see. One out of five so
what
far.
What you do is you, if it's the injectable flu, it is not live at all. It is something that might cause a local injection reaction, a little swelling and some pain, but very, very minimal.
Right.
If you... have the nasal mist sprayed, you have a live attenuated vaccine, which doesn't cause you to have the flu. It will give you give your body a chance to mount an immune response to it so that it will now recognize the true flu.
Okay.
So you're not getting the flu. You're just kind of getting the idea in your
body.
Immune system.
We accept that. Recognize
we accept it. So it's not that there's a 50-50 chance he will get it correctly, but he is expected. What's your second? Go ahead, question.
I didn't get the flu vaccine before September, so it's before December. So it's too late to get.
It is never too late.
Because that's false. You fought two beasts, two
false.
For two. Very good, very good.
Never too late.
Go ahead, tell us why.
Well, the flu virus, I keep mixing the words up, kind of marches around the globe. And it becomes in our area the season between late September, early October, to March and April.
Last year it was May, I think.
Right. Yeah. Well, the other thing too is we live in a much smaller world. So if the flu is prevalent on the other side of the world in August, and someone flies here, well, now it's prevalent here.
No.
It's worldwide.
It is worldwide.
Okay, two for two.
I already had the flu, so I don't need the vaccine.
True or false?
That's false as well.
Three for three. Okay, go ahead. Tell us why.
The reason that's false is you had one strain of the flu, and we're treating you for several strains. You might get another one.
You could get sick again. And there are several strains of the virus that are included in the vaccine every year.
Right. There's a trivalent and a tetravalent this year, so a quadrivalent.
That means that... They've looked at, They've looked at what kind of flu viruses we've had over the last year?
They do a sampling around the globe, they come up with the strains that are most prevalent, most likely, and they do kind of a managed approach towards
I just see the clock ticking, but
there are
two more questions. I want to see if you get them in.
Okay.
He's acing it so far. Go ahead.
When I get... the vaccine, I won't get the flu.
No, that's not true either.
4-for-4. Oh my gosh, very good.
Like I said before, we're vaccinating for a set of viruses.
Right.
If one mutates or if another one sneaks by, then
if that wasn't included in the vaccine, you could still get a flu virus.
Well, Dr. Odata, I want to thank you so much for being our guest on Health Matters. We've asked you, and please, may we have you again. You're just a wealth of information.
Absolutely.
Well,
we didn't have many breaks this time. We kept going, but we certainly had a lot to say.
We call Mike our resident in-house pharmacist.
Yes, that's right. But as I always say to our listening audience, when I end the show, to you, your family, and friends, I wish you all the best. And stay healthy. Why? Because your health does matter.
Yes.
We will see you next week. Everyone, let's say goodbye and feeling all right. Go ahead.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, everyone.
Right. Bye-bye.
Have a good week.
All right.